one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. My monster from the slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
Now, all right. Now we gotta go back, because you were off.
You were giggling.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. My monster from the slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
Yep. We gotta go back.
No. Also, I start laughing every time you start.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. My monster from the slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It got on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. Hey, everybody. Welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Birchie. Lindsay Leverage is here.
Hey, everybody.
How's it going, buddy?
Pretty good.
Yeah. How's your week been?
It's good. I'm going to a pumpkin patch this weekend.
So. Oh, pumpkin patch.
Yeah.
What do they have there?
What do they got at the pumpkin patch? They've got pumpkins.
That's a stupid question.
One, they have pumpkins. Two, they have hay bale rides. Three, there is a cow train.
Oh.
Four, hot apple cider and pulled pork sandwiches.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm right in line.
Yeah, we've got a pretty nice pumpkin patch out here. We go every year to the specific one. They also have a haunted corn maze.
Oh, a haunted corn maze.
Yes.
What does that involve? Do people run out of the corn maze? We're going to get into corn here in a little bit, but what does that involve? I've never been to a haunted corn maze. What does that involve?
It's like a haunted house, except you are lost in corn and it's dark outside.
Yeah. Are there
So maybe a little more scary.
Is it?
Because you don't know the way out.
So there's no signs that go here. Here's the exit.
They have trivia signs. So you can pick up a trivia card and take it with you on a variety of topics. And when you get to a certain junction, you can look. There'll be a number sign.
What?
I'm getting there. Okay. There'll be a number sign at a junction. You look at the question for that number, and if you know the right answer, you'll know whether you're supposed to go left or right.
Okay. That doesn't sound like all that much fun. What if you don't know the answer to the trivia question? And also, what if the trivia question is some sort of area of expertise that you don't have, sports or history?
So
or something
that's
like
why
that.
They have multiple topics. You can pick just the sports card or the history card or the pop culture card or Halloween trivia card.
Oh, I would definitely go for, because pop culture, it depends on who's writing the questions, right?
Someone who owns a corn maze is writing the questions.
So what do they do? Do they spend all day at home watching Netflix and I'm supposed to know things about Netflix shows, or do they go to the movies? What do they do? Do they go to the conventions? What do they do? That would be my big question. I would probably take the Halloween trivia.
That's the one my son picks every year.
Right.
And he's got the answers memorized at this point.
Oh,
they don't change the cards year.
Oh, all right. So you got a little cheat code.
Yeah, yeah.
In the form of your child.
Yes.
Yeah. What did I do? I went back to a little place called Star Wars Galaxy's Edge.
Again, huh?
Pilot again. Yep. banged it up as much as I possibly could.
Did you at least have a crew?
Yes, I did this time.
Okay.
It was a lot of fun. I know I'm very privileged that I get to live here and go whenever I feel like it, but really could not recommend it enough. There's not that many people there. It's, you know, there's people, but it's not like, oh, it's a 6-hour line or whatever.
Right.
It's 40 minutes, you know, you wait a less time in line for that, for the Millennium Falcon than you do for a lot of other rides. And, this time I went into Oga's Cantina, which is the cantina that's there. It's a real cool place. Admittedly, like, not much of a restaurant. Like, they sort of sell it to you as a theme restaurant, and it's kind of cool. You have to make a reservation, and I'm not so sure that it's necessarily worth it. It's neat to see the inside of the building. But, you know, you'll get the same experience just walking around the rest of the place.
How's the band?
So what they have is DJ Rex, who is the former pilot of Star Tours, who you may remember from the ride Star Tours. And he plays like remixes of, you know, the Cantina band song that everyone knows, and then a handful of other songs. I was sort of hoping it would be a live band so that I could go up and request shit and maybe slip him like $100 bill and be like, if you play the Monster Mash, I will give you $100, and I'll give you another $100 if you flip off anyone in the audience who's like, that's not from Star Wars. If you do that,
Monster Mash precedes time and space.
It does indeed.
It has survived into Star Wars. Like, you can't destroy it.
Well, anyway, so it's October.
Yeah.
And we've been doing a horror movie swap, and this week was kind of like, what's the worst you can give me? You gave me a film called Children of the Corn. From the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
That was your pick. Yep. And I watched it.
Yep.
And I hated it. So thanks, Lindsay. It was terrible. This is a movie about Linda Hamilton and some other dickhead who drives into rural wherever where there's a bunch of corn.
Nebraska.
Sorry. All right. Pardon me.
Get the lore, okay.
All right, sorry. Let me make sure I get Stephen King's coked out lore totally correct. Mm-hmm. They drive out in the middle of Nebraska, and there's a bunch of children out there who have murdered everyone in their small town.
Yeah.
Like, that's my understanding of the story. Now, you stop me if I'm getting this wrong.
Okay.
They've murdered everyone in their hometown, and there's one little brat who runs it. And then there's another brat who's, like, obviously way too old to be dealing with any of this. Some ginger kid with a giant mouth.
Yeah.
Who, he's Malachi, right? Is that his
name?
Yeah.
Malachi!
Yeah. And they're crucifying people on crosses made of corn. And Linda Hamilton and her idiot boyfriend just kind of sort of roam around town, trying to solve the mystery of what's going on here, but mostly they just kind of fuck around for like 90 minutes. What is good about this? I don't understand what's good about this. It ends in like, okay, I suppose the Children of the Corn have been momentarily defeated, but then there's 9 sequels to this.
Yeah.
So what the fuck? That's my question to you. What the fuck?
What the fuck? This movie scared the crap out of me as a kid.
Did it?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Why would anyone even let you watch this as a child?
There are going to be a lot of moments over the course of this podcast where you will ask that question.
Why
did you see this before the age of 15?
I see.
Whatever. So, I had a copy of this on VHS, and I would watch it with my cousins during sleepovers or whatever. Probably didn't understand a lot of it other than the fact that it was a scary movie, and there's a part where they hit a kid with their car.
Oh, yeah. That was, like, the one good part.
Yeah.
Where they just, like, fucking ram that kid.
Yeah. And the opening scene, I thought the opening scene is good. Like, everything up until right after the opening credits.
Yeah.
So, like, the opening scene is, like, this cafe, right? And I guess the kids have decided this is the time to murder all the people. And so, like, poison the coffee machine and then just start, like, stabbing everyone in the cafe.
I mean, if they poison the coffee machine, why would they then need to start stabbing everyone?
Well, because maybe the employees aren't drinking the coffee.
It's because Stephen King. It's because Stephen King is on drugs.
Yeah.
It's the early 80s and Stephen King is taking
high as a kite.
He's enjoying cocaine.
Yeah. So the reason this movie in particular scared me is because my grandma lived in a mobile home that was right up against a giant cornfield. And so whenever I went over there,
you were like, that ginger kid could be out there anywhere.
They could be out there. He who walks between the rows could be out in those rows. And if I go run around in there, you know, maybe he'll eat me or something. So, you know, just a sense of looming dread. Plagued my childhood.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, I've seen a lot of terrible Stephen King movies. Having sat through The Langoliers, Dreamcatcher, The Night Flyer, and others. This one actually ranked up there probably close to the worst Stephen King thing I've ever seen.
Fair.
It was so boring. It was so dull. Like, you spend so much time just watching these two, Linda Hamilton and whoever that other guy is, just drive around. Like, you spend so much time on that. And, like, the infighting among the religious kids is, like, okay. All right.
Point out that, like, they all look like Amish kids. Like, the one who's leading it, he's got a weird voice. It's, like, croaky, right? Like, he's got this, like, unnaturally croaky voice. And he, like, wears a big black hat and just, I don't know, stares at you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't like it.
It's okay.
At all?
You're not going to offend me by not liking Children of the Corn from 1984.
And yet at the same time, I find myself drawn to the sequels.
Oh, yeah.
Well, a lot of people seem to remember Children of the Corn 2 more than Children of the Corn 1.
Mm, okay.
Well, at least that's my experience. I don't know if that's yours, but like a lot of people seem to think about Children of the Corn 2 more than they think about the original. Now, I don't know. I don't know if King wrote that himself or what. I have no idea. But based on my experience with the first one,
I probably watched the second one at some point, but I don't have any memory of it. I probably only remember this one because I watched it so many times.
Yeah, well, anyway, my recommendation is do not watch Children of the Corn from the 80s. Don't watch that. It's not worth your time. But maybe you have a different opinion.
No, I don't really.
Now, the movie I gave you is called Ghoulies 2.
Yes, it is. And I'd like to point out that even though Children of the Corn is really bad, Ghoulies 2 currently stands at a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Well, of course it does. Of course it does.
Critics just can't appreciate this level of art.
Now, Lindsay, please tell me what Ghoulies 2 is about.
Ghoulies 2 is about carnies.
And?
It's about carnies and demons. Okay, so we've got, I'm not going to remember any of these characters' names, by the way. It's not that important.
I just want to point out, I've been making this show for 10 years. This is like the proudest moment of my life that I finally got. I got a co-host who was like, all right, I'll watch Ghoulies too.
Now, when I looked it up too, I saw the poster image for this movie. And I know that I used to walk past it in the horror section in Blockbuster all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And it's memorable. It's got two little demon dudes in a toilet. Mm-hmm. So as a predecessor of what's to come, I suppose. So precursor of what's to come, I suppose. So Ghoulies 2 is about some carnies. One of them is a really old guy and a drunk, and he used to be a magician, and he's traveling around with his nephew. Their carnival is going to get closed down by some 1980s CEO financial stereotype dude if they can't up their ticket sales. But fortunately for them, a bunch of demons escaped, presumably from whatever happened at the end of Ghoulies 1, and has taken residence in their haunted house. And people are like, these are awesome rats. And also, they're murdering people. That's Ghoulies 2.
Yep. And then they blow them up at the end.
What they do is they take a magic book that the magician guy had that apparently works as far as demonology is concerned. They summon a larger demon that eats all of the smaller demons, and then they blow that one up.
Uh-huh. They also, sure do. They sure do.
One of the little demons is a bald cat with a switchblade.
Yep.
He's my favorite.
It's a stupid fucking...
So stupid.
I like it a lot, though. Like, that's my kind of horror movie. Like, little stupid puppet monsters that, you know, at no point is this thing taking itself seriously at all. Right. Now, that's not to say that I think this is, like, intentional satire or anything, because it's not. It's just... Stupid.
It's intentional comedy.
It's just fucking stupid. Right. You know, it's a magic moon boy. You know,
that's that's at the very beginning.
Stupid
the magic
shit.
Moon shit.
It's stupid
and
shit.
There's also a scene where, like, they're literally murdering someone on a not a guillotine, but a swinging pendulum blade. And there's a whole crowd, and they're like, rats, 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 because they just think there's some sort of animatronic or something. And this dude's about to, like, have his guts ripped open. Also, why was that a real blade? Why would you have any real sharp things inside of a haunted house attraction?
I don't know. They came out of a toilet. What do you want? What are you expecting?
I need to know if you've ever been to a carnival that had strippers, because this one does.
I have, actually.
Really?
Been to a carnival that had strippers.
See, the only carnivals I've been to took place in grocery store parking lots, and there maybe was a Ferris wheel.
If you go to state fairs, sometimes if you go late at night, occasionally they will have strippers.
I feel like that's like a hidden secret of state fairs that I never knew before now.
Well, or county fairs. Actually, I'm not sure if it was state or county, but I have been to at least one state fair where if you went after 8. Mm-hmm. They had strippers.
Okay.
Now, that's not to say that Ghoulies 2 is actually a, accurate reporting on real life. I'm just saying that it's not completely unheard of. So I like this movie. The reason I gave it to you is because A, LOL. B, I suppose that's the entire reason. Like, it's really stupid.
My tunes.
So this movie features some teenagers going through a haunted house, and they're carrying like an 80s like cassette boombox.
Yeah.
And it's like red, and they're wandering through, and it gets stolen or something or thrown out, and they go like, my tunes. Yeah. My tunes. And it makes me laugh so hard every time. I think that's probably why I like... I don't know. I kind of like springing this movie on people, because most people don't really know what to expect. You're like, hey, let's watch this movie Ghoulies 2. And they're like, well, wait, I haven't seen Ghoulies 1. It's like, it's fine. You don't need to have seen Ghoulies 1.
It's barely relevant.
And you certainly don't need to see Ghoulies 3, Ghoulies Go to College. You definitely don't need to see that.
There's a fourth one, too. Might be Ghoulies Go to Space. I don't know.
Whatever.
This is kind of like during that period where there was a lot of puppet horror films.
Yeah.
Like, there was this. Which I like. There was Puppet Master series.
Well, yeah, there's like 17 of those things. Yeah.
Is that how many, really?
Well, okay. You know, I'm probably exaggerating, but like...
Oh, I mean, I'd believe it, so...
There's a ton of those.
Yeah.
A ton of those Puppet Master movies. But I like that kind of silly-ass, like... Yeah, we're not taking any of this seriously. Like, whatever. Here you go. I really like the shot at the end with the giant ghoulie where they stuff the Molotov cocktail down his throat.
They put it inside of a gorilla costume, and he thinks that the gorilla costume is another little ghoulie, so he eats it, and then explodes.
And then it has, like, this shot of, like this like, cut-in shot where it's, like, 1, 2, 3, and then you see him blow up.
Yeah.
And it's, like,
I think it was a slow-mo explosion,
It's, like, the crappiest, like, bespoke explosion. Like, I don't know, man. If you told me, like, okay, you got to program a Halloween movie festival, I would conclude it with Ghoulies, too. I would be like, y'all going to watch this movie about the little crappy toilet puppets that terrorize a carnival.
They knock a guy into a vat of acid inside of a garage at the very beginning. Just like, what? It's very obviously just like dry ice inside of a barrel. And it says, like, caution, like, acid, da-da-da. And there's, like, no lid on it. It's just open in this place of business.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, I find that, like, scary movies that genuinely try to actually scare me are kind of, whatever. But, like, something like this where it's just, like, a stupid cartoon the entire time.
Yeah.
How could you blame it? Like, whatever. They're just having some fun. And they had to do all that in camera. There's no CG, so.
Yeah.
You know. I don't know. What did you think of the film Ghoulies 2?
It is, it's very easy to watch while inebriated.
Yeah, I see.
So save it for that. Also, there's a cat with a switchblade. It's like the best thing.
Yeah.
He's just like got that big wide mouth. He's always like, meow, meow, like the entire time. And then he attacks you with a switchblade and like cuts your Achilles tendon. Like, it's important to remember that these as monsters, they're very small. They're like roughly the size of a Furby.
Sure.
For anyone who remembers Furbies. So, I mean, like, you're like, how is that going to be intimidating? They're small and I am a giant human. But they still managed to, you know, get a pretty good kill count, disguise the dude as a mummy at one point, you know.
Yeah.
It's entertaining. So take that, Rotten Tomatoes.
It's a magic moon boy. I don't know. I'm happy to piss people off with Ghoulies too anytime I can. Okay, Lindsay, what's in the news?
Okay, so for the news today, we kind of have an interesting situation with Studio Ghibli Films. They're going to be streaming, finally.
You almost said Ghibli.
I did, and I stopped myself.
Well, I appreciate it. So you're going to be able to watch Ghibli Films on HBO Max, which is basically Warner Brothers streaming service.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting they decided to go with HBO Max because Warner Brothers also owns Crunchyroll. So it seems like probably a branding move there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You're dealing with the mercurial and difficult to please Hayao Miyazaki. So I'm not surprised that they went with Disney's direct competition. I'm not surprised by that at all. And it's nice that you'll be able to watch this stuff streaming. That's cool. I wonder how G-Kids feels about this, though, because they have been, like, every month there's some sort of re-release of, like, Kiki's Delivery Service or Totoro or Nausicaa or something like that. Like, they've been re-releasing those in theaters over and over and over and over and over again. So I wonder how they feel about this.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume that they were involved in it as the distributors for the films in North America.
Yeah, I would assume.
I'm also surprised it's going to be streaming at all. Streaming services doesn't really seem like something Miyazaki would be like, yeah, let's get on that.
I mean, if you want your content to continue to be relevant to people, you better put it on a streaming service. Like, it's a way to make more money. Like, you'll sell more merchandise if people can watch Kiki. Like, Ghibli has basically, they don't produce that much stuff. So what their chief business is, it seems like, is merchandise at this point. And if people can't watch your movies unless they buy the Blu-ray, like sight unseen and haven't seen the film before, you know, you need to make sure the stuff is available on a streaming service so that people can continue to be introduced to it casually without needing to dedicate, you know, $25 to a Blu-ray or something like that.
Yeah, and the merchandise is everywhere. You can go get it at bookstores and stuff at this point. You can get Totoro stuff all over the place.
Yeah.
So it's not really hard to find anymore.
Hot Topic has a whole Ghibli section in it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, if you're under the age of, let's say, 30, and have never had the opportunity to watch these movies without buying the physical media or going to see it in a theater, you're not going to even know what any of that stuff is. So I think it's a smart move. In as much as it kind of, you know, makes it seem a little less special, I don't know. That's such a dumb, like, subjective thing, though. Like, oh, it's not special anymore because now I can just watch it anytime I want streaming on HBO Max. Like, whatever. People need to see this stuff. These are classics. Like, they deserve to be shared with the whole world.
Yeah, as a parent, too, I'm glad that I have that option for at home. Going out to a theater with one of my kids, leaving the other kid at home is kind of a whole circus.
Oh, well, I mean, what, you don't... Wait, do you not own any of these on Blu-ray?
I have Totoro on Blu-ray, and that's it? I have Nausicaa.
That's it?
Yes.
I have all of them, Lindsay.
I've seen most of them. I guess my like dedication to physical media is not
well great. Sure. But so there was some controversy surrounding this. There was some interesting developments with the news around it. Can you talk about a little bit about that?
Oh yeah, so I don't know how the timing of this worked out. It's kind of nuts. But Polygon published a piece on Tuesday that was discussing why these films will likely never be on streaming. And they cited a statement from GKids as explaining that, like you said, they want it to be special. And so it's home video or in the theater or not at all. And then about 2 days later, this HBO Max news came out and everyone was kind of shell-shocked. Like, how did these two things come out at the same time? And when I first read it, I assumed it was maybe an error on GKids' part. Like someone had given a statement to Polygon that maybe didn't know about this deal. And now, you know, kind of egg on the face sort of situation. But GKids has clarified on Twitter that that statement is real. It's just outdated. It's from 2018.
Well, we all make mistakes.
Yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't seem like it's that big a deal to me. But people will like, here's the thing, though, like, it seems like that was just a mistake, and whoever wrote that, whatever, you know, poor freelancer wrote that article, was looking for a lead and thought they had one, and maybe had heard some rumblings about this behind the scenes, and then found this quote, and then wrote the article, and, you know, it was just a mistake. It doesn't seem like it's that big a deal. It's nice that you'll be able to watch some absolutely incredible world-changing movies on HBO Max pretty soon. Like, that's cool. That's a cool thing. So it's something to be happy about. Anything else in the news?
Yeah. The Academy of Motion Arts and Pictures and Sciences, you know, those guys that run the Academy Awards.
They released. I'm familiar, yes.
Yes. Okay. Well, they released the list of animated films that are up for consideration for the nomination for Best Animated Picture. And four of them are anime.
Yeah, and none of them are going to get nominated. Unless they're represented, like the GKids has actually a really good track record of being able to get their movies nominated for Oscars because they have those connections, and that's totally political. Whether or not your stuff gets nominated for an Oscar is entirely political. It's how well connected you are, how well you know Academy members, how many votes you can pull in, you know, that kind of thing. So I don't think that it's completely outside the realm of possibility that some of this stuff might get nominated, but it also kind of needs to show here pretty soon. I don't know when Weathering with You actually comes out here in the States. It's pretty soon, I think.
I think so. I'm not sure of the date either, but it sounds like what you're telling me is that Promare is not going to win Best Animated Picture.
Look, the Academy voters are old. They're really old. And the odds that you would even get them to watch Promare is low. It's low. Now, they've done some work. The Academy has done some work trying to diversify the voting membership. But it's still largely like old white actors. And they don't necessarily have that much of an interest in something like Promare. I mean, you just show them the poster and they'll be like, what is this? What is this shit?
This is bright and shiny and it doesn't look like it's a family drama. So.
Yeah, this seems like it's made for very intense 20-year-olds. So I'm not all that interested. I would be overjoyed if Promare was nominated for Best Animated Feature. That would be amazing. It would not win because Disney has like 50,000 things out right now. So Toy Story 4, Frozen 2 is coming. Like,
yeah,
one of those. Like, if Toy Story 4 doesn't win, I'll be, I'll eat my hat. I don't even own a hat. So
I will mail you one of my many hats.
Okay.
For you to eat.
I'll roast it and eat it. yeah, no, it I don't think any of this stuff stands a chance. It's nice when it gets nominated. I don't know, like the Oscars, like I watch them every year religiously. I pay attention. I try to see everything that's nominated. It's been a hobby of mine since I was a kid. Like, you know, I was that kid who like had a little ballot like sheet and I would try to pick what I thought would win. Even as like a 10-year-old, I was doing that.
Wow. Yeah.
No, I mean, come on. I love the movies. But it doesn't, it's not validation, really. It doesn't really matter that much. No one really cares. Like, it's funny, like, people on the internet make a huge stink about, oh, this should have been nominated, that should have been nominated, blah, 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 but then, like, they don't watch what actually wins. Like, the number of people I know who have actually seen the absolutely wonderful Best Picture winner from a few years ago, Moonlight, is like three. I know like three people who have actually sat down to watch that.
Yeah.
But they bitched a lot about what wasn't nominated that year. So it's like, well, if you don't give a shit, then you don't give a shit. You're just complaining about what you think should be held to the standard. And you don't actually care. You're just complaining. And right. So, like, I don't take a lot of that complaining seriously. And it doesn't matter whether or not anime gets nominated for an Academy Award. It's nice for the people who made it, but it's not necessarily going to get more people to see the film. And it certainly doesn't take the film away from you if it doesn't get nominated.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's, yeah.
You can keep enjoying it to the level that you already enjoy it, regardless of
whether
a bunch of people tell you that it's the best one or not.
Yeah, it's right. You know, that validation matters for people who work in the industry. It certainly matters. Like, if you have an Academy Award to your credit, then you're going to get more work, and that's great for you. But it's validation. I'm not so sure it matters that much anymore. People don't seem to pay that much attention. So, well, anyway, anything else?
Let's see. No.
Oh.
Oh. Well, yes. Okay.
But what if
we talk about Team Rocket?
Okay.
Okay. So Team Rocket, lovable villains from the Pokemon franchise.
Mm-hmm. The best thing about Pokemon.
The best thing about Pokemon, they're loved worldwide, including in China.
Okay.
One specific man in China tweeted, he didn't tweet, it wasn't on Twitter, but he shared on social media his love for Team Rocket and included a picture of the characters along with a screen cap of the controversy involving the Houston Rockets. Are you familiar with the current controversy involving the Houston Rockets?
Somebody expressed support for Hong Kong, I'm sure.
Yes. So general manager.
But I'm not familiar with that controversy, but that's probably it.
You can guess given the climate of our times.
Yeah.
So the general manager of the Houston Rockets tweeted support for Hong Kong protesters. There's protesters in Hong Kong fighting for their democratic rights against police force over there. It's been pretty crazy and it's still ongoing. But the NBA has a lot of China money involved.
Yeah, the NBA stars are huge in China. Like, the NBA is gigantic over there.
So the general manager showing support for Hong Kong caused a bunch of backlash against the Houston Rockets. Tencent Sports, who streams to like 500,000 people, refused to stream their games. Sponsors backed out. All this kind of stuff over his personal support for the Hong Kong protesters.
Fucking cowards.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah. they can't cancel this show, so fuck you.
Yeah. No, you can't. So, this Chinese man, he also happens to work for a sporting organization in China. They organize sporting events there. Mm-hmm. His bosses found out about his little tongue-in-cheek social media post, and they made him apologize publicly. They made him sign an apology letter, and then they shared that letter along with their own apology. And some of the statements in the letter they're very like forced patriotism sounding. It's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
One of them is a statement about him talking about how a parade made him cry warm tears.
Uh-huh.
It's just
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's depressing.
Jesse James and Meowth say democracy now.
Meowth, that's right. Yeah. I don't know how that situation's gonna play out, but power to the people.
Yeah.
That is my mantra. Anything else?
I've got one new funny one that came up today.
Okay.
Okay, so the founder of Bushiroad, which is like a gaming multimedia card.
Yeah, they make all kinds of things. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Mostly,
one of their properties.
Card games.
Yeah, one of their properties is Bang Dream, which is a girls' band,
right.
A mobile game, and whatever. And they introduced a new male character in the game. He's a younger sibling for one of the band members. Mm-hmm. And I guess previous story, it fucks with the lore.
No, who cares?
Who cares? Okay,
who could possibly give a shit?
They all thought that she was an only child up to this point. Now they've said she has a little brother, and that screws with the lore. So anyway, he's giving this live presentation, and the voice actresses are there. And someone asks him about if people are going to get upset about this. And he asks all the voice actresses to cover their ears. And he says that it's fine to introduce male characters as long as they're a father or a little brother whose penis can't get hard yet.
Okay, getting real.
Yeah, getting really I guess he didn't know that it was being live streamed.
Wait, hang on. This is a father who can't get hard? Like, what?
I guess the idea is that, you know, a father character is not going to have a hard on for...
Oh, yeah, certainly that's never happened in anime. Anyway.
Okay. But, I mean, he's basically out and out saying, like, we can put male characters in this game as long as the players don't feel threatened by the character's ability to bone one of the female characters.
Well, I mean, at this point, they must be like, well, can we reach a female audience with this? Like, is there a way to pull in a female audience for something like Bang Dream? Which
I hate that title.
It's yeah.
I know they didn't intend it that way at all. But
yeah, well, didn't they though?
Giving them the benefit of the doubt here, I guess, but
never give marketing the benefit of the doubt.
I don't know. So now people are mad at him for talking about an erection at a public event.
Oh, and God, calm. You need to calm down. Like, of course, people are mad at everything all the damn time. Like,
yeah,
stupid. Like, oh no, he told the truth. Oh no, gosh, I'm so insulted and upset. He told the truth. I'm gonna go online and tweet my outrage. It was stupid. Stupid.
Yeah.
Whatever.
That's all the news I have today. Just erections and
China.
Yeah. China.
Yep. Well, what else is there in life but erections and China? okay, so because it's kind of a weak season and we're kind of at the beginning of it, we decided to do something a little different this week. What we're going to do is count down our top five anime of all time. Now, that sounds like a big deal, but it's not. And here's my philosophy about this before we even get started.
Okay.
In my opinion, now I watch a lot of anime, I watch a lot of movies. Your top five of all time is just a moniker that you use to say, these are my five favorites right now. And it changes. It changes with you. It changes with your life. It changes with your attitude. It changes what you've seen recently. It's never static. And it doesn't have to be static. It's not going to be etched on your fucking tombstone. You're just talking about right now, these are my five favorite things that stick out in my mind all the time. Now, my top three have been pretty solid for the last couple years. But the last two change quite a lot, actually. And I really actually more than likely have like a top 20 or something like that, because I've seen a lot of anime and I like a lot of anime. But I just I don't want to make it seem like this is some sort of we're carving this into stone and this can never be changed. You know, it's not like that. And I don't think anyone's top five is really like that. I think it's how that's kind of how people present it. But that's not really the intention here.
Yeah, if you come up to me in a couple years and ask me what my top five are and it's different, it's not like a gotcha moment. It just means I saw something else that was good.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Well, yeah. And like, so I've listed my top five on this show before and it's changed since then. So with that in mind, just that's the spirit of this here. Just keep that in mind. So, Lindsay, what's your number five?
So my number five is really recent and it's Oh Maidens in Your Savage Season.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It just shot way up there. The writing in it is very solid. I found all the characters very relatable in different aspects. It's one of the most honest depictions I've seen of burgeoning female sexuality and like dealing with that awkwardness specifically, being honest about female sexual desire in a way that's not putting it down or viewed specifically through a male lens.
Yeah.
So it's not about these girls being sexy because guys watching this show want to see sexy girls. It's about they own it. And that's really unique. And I think actually pretty powerful and important as far as media and letting teen girls, young girls watch this sort of thing who are in a similar time in their life. It can be reaffirming. And even as a very, very grown adult, it was still nice to watch it and kind of view my own past through that and have something to relate to and being like, oh yeah, you know, I wasn't a freaking weirdo. This is normal. Just great characters all around. I really liked Hongo, which that might be the controversial one because she's really trying to hook up with her older teacher. But there's something to that too about being a teenage girl and idolizing like a mature man.
Yeah, and it's also a double standard because if it was, you know, genders reversed, no one would bat an eye.
Right. Right. Hot for Teacher was written by Van Halen in what year?
Yeah. Right.
Right. So, you know, and her desire to be like a very good writer and feeling like she needs more experience to better her writing and pursue that dream of hers too was something that I connected with. And then also Momo, who comes out as a lesbian during the show, I hadn't seen that in that particular light either. Like it's a very realistic depiction of having those feelings. You have a close group of friends. You don't want to come out because what if they think you're weird and like gonna hit on them or something, you know, won't want to be around you anymore, won't want to do sleepovers with you anymore. That whole thing, like she deals with that and also being rejected without them knowing they're rejecting her. Like she asks a few times some questions regarding her sexuality, but her friends don't know that's what it's about. She asks one of the girls if the world was going to end. And this question comes up a couple times during the show. If the world was going to end and you had to sleep with one person, either me or the male character, who would, or, I think it was like the teacher actually, or the teacher, who would it be? And the idea was supposed to be, well, wouldn't you pick her? Because this character she's asking is not attracted to the teacher at all. And that'd be really weird, but they still prefer the teacher because he's male. And they just can't, they just, you know, doesn't occur to them that they would have sex with their female friend because they're not gay. And like, so that hurts her. They don't know they're hurting her when they give her that answer. But that felt very raw and very real and genuine.
Well, the whole show is like that. Like, it's Mario Kata just like basically ripping her chest open and being like, here's all my feelings about this kind of thing. And I'm going to make you hurt. at how real this shit is. Like, yeah. It's an excellent show. I wouldn't put it on my... I would have it on a top 20, but probably not my top 5. But it's a great show. Truly special. Yeah. And I really strongly recommend you read the manga, because it's very good, too.
Okay.
Good stuff. Okay, my number 5 is new. It's a film called Premiere. Now, I didn't think this would be on here, but the more I've seen that and the more I think about it... Now, I'm a big movie guy, right? Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of 92 hours or 90 minutes, and you get the whole thing out there. It's not 10 hours long or whatever.
Right, right.
This is the entire Studio Trigger ethos and mentality distilled down to a little over 90 minutes. And this is about a firefighter, and we've talked about it on the show before, so I'm not sure how much I really need to get into it, but... Sure. There's a race of people who call themselves Burnish, and they can burst fire from their hands. And then there's a hot-blooded firefighter, and they just pound the shit out of each other until they kiss. And it's great. And, like, I like most of Trigger's output. They've made some mediocre stuff, but this seems like all of their heart and soul is in this. Everything that studio stands for is in this movie, and it's... It doesn't take that long to get to the point. And it's a wonderful theatrical experience. It's rowdy. It's loud. It's right in your face the whole time. It's very, very, very intense. I loved that movie. And the more I thought about it, I was like, I think I need to put Premiere on my top 5. Because, like, I haven't responded to anything like that in a long time. And, like, I thought about putting Thunderbolt Fantasy on this list. But then I was like, well... Should I? And I kept thinking about it. I'm like, no, Premiere. It's Premiere. Like, that movie really was awesome. Like, truly spectacular. And I can't wait for you to finally see it, Lindsay.
Yeah, I'm going to go see it when it comes back around. I swear.
Yeah, I'm definitely seeing it when it hits theaters again. I can't wait to have it on. Hopefully maybe they'll do a 4K disc, but I can't wait to have it on home video. It's really a special film. And I think it's got something for everyone in it. It might not appeal to everyone, but it's a special movie. Okay, so your number 4.
Okay, I want to preface this with, as we slowly get down to number 1, it's kind of like unpeeling me as an onion.
Okay.
And then, okay, so this is gonna get pretty fucking real here. So okay, number 4.
All right, I'm gonna. All okay, right. Hang on, give me just a second.
Okay.
Okay, go.
All right, number 4 is Girls' Last Tour, which came out with the last 5 years. I watched it earlier this year, and it's kind of, I don't want to say it's harrowing, but it's the show is about despair. So you have two dorky kids, young adult women. I don't know. They're like roughly teenage age, but they're drawn in this very kind of like Moe Blob style, so you can't really tell how old they are. They have a little tank. It's post-apocalyptic or something. There's barely any humans around anymore, and they're just kind of traveling around together looking for food and goofing off. But they often come into contact with other adults every once in a while, and there is never a happy ending.
Right.
Right, and it just really distills that specific emotion of pointlessness and the kind of release in realizing that nothing matters. God, that sounds really dark, but that's what it is. The best example might be the scientist that they come across. Now, she's got these blueprints that she found, scavenged, and she's trying to build an aircraft. And she's going to build this aircraft, and she's going to fly out of this, you know, weird city that they're exploring, this empty city of nothing, and like go beyond the horizon or something. And they stay with her for a while because she's got food, and they watch her build her man-powered flight machine, and they're going to watch her take off. And she takes off, and she goes, and she goes, and it fucking crashes. And then she's got a parachute, and then she just has this look of release on her face as all of her dreams have just exploded and she's drifting back down into this city of nothing. She's been working on it for years. And it's not the only character that that happens to. There's a man earlier in who's decided the point of his existence, I guess, is just to map the entire labyrinth that they're wandering around in. And so he's got all these papers. They meet him and there's an elevator and they're going to take their little tank with him on the elevator and go up. It halts about halfway up and they lose their balance and he loses hold of his papers, his years and years of papers, and they just float back down over the entire city. He'll never be able to recover them. And he decides, well, I guess that's it. He gives them his camera that he was using to take pictures of things for this, and just there's a brief moment where he's going to fall off too, and he asks them to like let him die because he doesn't have a point anymore.
Yeesh.
And then he decides not to, but he gives them his camera and kind of that's the last you see of him.
I never finished that show, but that's, well, anyway, that's pretty dark.
It is really dark, and it's all framed around, you know, these cutesy characters just wandering around.
So it's cute girls doing depressing things.
It's cute girls attempting to do cute things in like a world of nihilism or something.
God.
And it's my number four because God knows I've felt that way at various points in my life. And I can say, hey, yeah, I know that feel deeply.
That's I don't know that I'll touch that one anytime too soon. My number four is a film by a director called Takeishi Koike called Redline. I don't know. Have you seen Redline?
No.
No. All right.
I didn't want to tell you that I hadn't seen it.
Now you have to watch it.
But I had to because I won't lie on the podcast. No, I haven't seen Redline. I know that it was a huge work of love. Like, it took him like 7 years to make it, right?
It took a very long time to make. Yeah. And so this movie is about racers, Sweet JP and his car. And he has sort of you ever see the Fast and the Furious? Where they use the NOS energy to
to boost the car. They've got like a button.
Yeah, he's got that basically, and he's racing against a bunch of really diverse aliens, and they have this sort of highly competitive race circuit, and they just sort of drop onto a planet and they'll race. And whoever wins, you know, wins. And he's racing against a famous racer named Crab Sanoshi. And the climax of the movie is basically like they drop onto this alien planet that's controlled by fascists, like militarized fascists. And they're like, fuck you, we're going to race anyway. And like that's kind of the angle that they're going for is like, sort of rebel without a cause, like, I'm going to smash the gas, fuck you, fascism.
Yeah.
Racing towards the end. And, the second act is a little slow, but the movie is so gorgeous because there's no CG in it, and it's mostly about cars. So all the mechanical animation in it is animated by hand, which is part of the reason why it's so gorgeous and incredible to see. It has an unbelievable, like, relentless pounding soundtrack. It's very intense for most of its runtime. It ends, the way that it ends is one of my favorite endings of all time. So, Sweet JP and Crab, they get blown out of their cars. They're right next to the finish line. Mm-hmm. And at this point, they've encountered monsters and, like, driven people off the road and, like, have just been... horribly traumatized by the end of this thing.
Yeah.
But the whole attitude of the film is just like, oh, like it's, you know, you smash the gas and the screen just warps and they're going as fast as they fucking can. And the sense of speed in this movie is like unparalleled in my opinion. The end of this movie, they get blown out of their cars. JP has a pompadour, like a big, you know, a big silly pompadour. The thing that helps him win is that he flies, him and Crab fly through the finish line, and his pompadour is the first thing to touch the finish line. So they fly through the finish line. They win the race. Then they kiss as they're drifting to the ground. And then there's a giant, the giant word love appears on the screen. Smash to credits. It's
now, Zach,
fucking
would you
perfect.
Say that he won it by a hair?
Well, that's probably the joke, but it's perfect. Like, every time I've shown that movie to anybody, they're like, holy shit, that exists? It's like, yep. Yes, it does. I love showing that movie to people who haven't seen it because they're always blown away. And it's such an impressive feat. You can get it on Blu-ray for nothing. It's on Amazon. You can get that. I watched it again recently and was like, holy shit, Redline. Like when it came out, I was like, holy shit, Redline. And every time I watch it, that's always my reaction. Holy shit, Redline. It's great. If you haven't seen it, maybe I'll just send you a copy or something so you can see it, because it's,
oh cool,
it's phenomenal. What's your number three?
All right, so bringing it back down to Sad Town.
Oh, great.
My number three is Death Parade.
Oh, great. No, I love Death Parade. I reviewed every episode for the site.
Yeah, so that's a great show. It's kind of a...
I don't think it's that sad.
No, the episode I'm going to talk about is pretty fucking sad, though. But right. In general, no, it's not.
It has the ending is great, though. Like, it's so sweet. Like,
it is. It has a very sweet ending. The opening sequence.
Oh, God. Like, Brady, that Brady opening is one of the best of all time. Like, yeah. Straight up, one of the best ever. It's
I'd put Brady's opening for that and the opening for Megalobox pretty close together as far as some of my favorite recent anime openings. They're both really good. Death Parade is about... dude whose name is Latin, and he judges souls in the afterlife.
Dakim, yeah.
Dakim. I was probably going to say Decim, so I knew it's I would Dakim. Just ruin yeah. that. Dakim. All right. And he's judging souls in the afterlife by making them play games. Initially, only one will get reincarnated, while the losing soul is thrown into the void.
Well, he has a boss. He's not actually...
He's not calling the shots.
Yeah, he's not calling
the
shots, yeah.
It's a corrupt system, anyway. Yeah. But there... I really, really got hooked on it with one episode specifically. It was like a punch to the gut. So there's an episode where one of the souls is this woman. She was killed by her assistant, and she was like a reality TV personality. She ended up getting a reality TV show because she had tons of children, which in Japan means she's had five, which is still a large family, but not, it's not, Kate plus eight or whatever.
Yeah, it's not 16 children or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember the name of that Christian family that had like 22 kids or something ridiculous. But anyway, good. So she's got like five kids, and she's charged with playing a fighting game against this other guy. It's, you know, like a Street Fighter type beat 'em up.
Yeah, I remember this one. Yeah.
Oh God. And they frame it like it's very difficult for her to play the game, because usually when the souls start playing the games, they somehow like bring out aspects of their life that were traumatizing.
Yeah.
And so she was the victim of domestic abuse, like from multiple partners. She got pregnant very young, had a deadbeat husband who beat the shit out of her. So she's like playing this fighting game against this guy, and it's like flashing back to all the times that she was abused and how that ended up making her kind of cold. And so when she got the reality TV show option, she ended up taking out that stress on her assistant who killed her. And I was just like, I haven't seen a lot of anime that takes on those kind of topics.
Yeah.
Specifically domestic abuse.
Yeah, it goes into some pretty unique places, like just subjects you wouldn't expect something to cover. Like, it's not really like it's not particularly escapist. In other words, it's tackling some pretty rough stuff, which is part of the reason I liked it so much.
Yeah, I wasn't scared to take on social issues and to like really put it out there and also get you to empathize with characters you thought you wouldn't initially with. The reality TV lady, you know, she's kind of presented at first as being skeptical that this is even real because she's from reality TV. So she thinks she's like on candid camera or something like that. She just seems kind of bitchy or something. And then you get into her backstory and you're like, well, yeah, that might make you like that, you know, have a more cynical outlook. And, you know, she's a survivor, actually, and not just this mean TV personality. And so it gets you to rethink how you're interpreting these characters, and, you know, it's not so black and white.
Yeah, for me, the whole pleasure of that show was the relationship between Dakeem and she's just called Ona for most of the show, which just means woman.
Right.
You know, his assistant, effectively. And he basically learns empathy. Like, that's
right.
What he's learning. He's learning that this system of judgment, which I think echoes in the real world, is like, well, you can judge or you can empathize. And mm-hmm. that show argues for empathy. And that means a lot to me.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful show. There's a lot of loose ends that are, you know, don't quite get tied up. And, you know, it's only 11 episodes long, I think, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a good one. And so long as you don't obsess over the world building too much and are like, well, what were they doing with that? What were they doing with that? It's like, well, it's not really about that. It's about the relationship between these two characters. I liked the Ginty stuff, you know, the other bar, because they're just contrasting him with Dakeem. Like, that's...
Yeah,
that's the
point. Is that the redheaded guy?
Yeah, the redheaded guy, and he's got the idol, and all that stuff with the idol and his fan being in the same death bar.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it. Like, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the way that it concluded as well. I thought that show was really special, and I'm glad that it's on your list because it's fun to talk about it. So
yeah,
that's cool. My number three is a film you may have heard of called Princess Mononoke, or Mononoke Hime. Absolutely, in my opinion. Now, I've always considered Princess Mononoke to be a distillation of Nausicaä of the Valley of the Wind, which is sort of my other favorite Miyazaki thing. Do I really need to describe the plot of this? Basically, there's a warrior who gets cursed by a plague that is attacking and destroying the natural world. And he has to go on a journey to get it cured. In his journey, he meets San, who is, you know, the beast princess. She rides around on a giant wolf with their little wolf pack. Well, I guess giant wolf pack. They slowly become friends, and their nemesis, so to speak, is the ethically sort of complicated Lady Eboshi, who takes care of lepers, but is also sort of destroying the natural world around her in order to create civilization.
Mm-hmm.
They fight, and it is my favorite Ghibli thing by a mile. Mm-hmm. I love that movie. When's the last time you saw that one?
I saw it in theaters, and I've seen it multiple times since. The dub of that is also really good.
Yeah, it's all right. Checkered history on that one, because it was put together by a man named Harvey Weinstein. Billy Crudup and Claire Danes and Minnie Driver are in that one.
Gillian Anderson is the wolf.
Gillian Anderson, yeah. Moro is played by Gillian Anderson. Like, I mean, look, I watch everything subtitled, and the Japanese voice cast on that is also spectacular. But
yeah,
it's a great dub. And anytime I put that on, I'm like, okay, I'm going to put something on in the background while I'm working, I can't put that on, because I will just be like, oh shit, I got to watch Mononoke Hime.
Yeah, yeah. Random trivia fact, San was my first cosplay ever.
Really?
You know?
That's cool.
Yeah.
Do you have pictures of that?
No, oh, I don't. Dang. I was like 14, maybe.
Yeah, no, I've been to the Ghibli Museum a couple times. It's always really hard for me not to just buy all the Mononoke stuff they have there. Like, they made this like giant replica San mask, and I was like,
I didn't have the mask skills, but I did have the cape, the full furry cape thing, and yeah, that was cool. That was
yeah,
fun.
She's a badass. Like,
yeah,
badass character. I love that scene, the famous scene where she's sucking the the blood out of the wolf and just spitting it into the river, and just looks over at Ashitaka and like, fuck you.
Like, and then she wipes her mouth with her arm and she's got blood streaked all over and just like,
yeah, it's good stuff. I love the little Kodama, the little forest spirits. Like, everyone loves them. And the deer god. So the deer god, that effect where puts their hoof down, and the plants grow up around it.
Yeah,
spectacular animation, and interestingly, something that people have been attempting to do in live action since the 80s. That was an idea that originated, I think, with Ridley Scott's original script for Legend, where the unicorns were supposed to be doing that, where they put their hoof down and plants just grow up wherever they put their hoof down.
Yeah.
And they did that in Mononoke Hime, and it's gorgeous. And I love the way that character, it's so otherworldly. It's so cool. Like, it's not really otherworldly. It's just like, if you're going to illustrate or articulate the complicated and divine beauty of the natural world, how would you do that? And it feels like that is it. Like, you nailed it. Like, this is perfect.
It almost has a human-like face, but it's just not quite.
And it's just there to kind of be, this is a divine creature. It's intended to look divine. And it does.
Yeah, you know it as soon as you look at it. Yeah,
it does. Like, man, I love that movie. Now I'm going to have to watch it tonight.
Yeah, me too.
Mononoke Hime, that's great. Okay, number two.
All right, so these two haven't changed for me in years and years and years. And my number two is Revolutionary Girl Utena.
Okay, that's mine too, so we can just do this all at once. But mine is specifically the movie.
Right, which is like a distillation of the themes over the longer...
Right, this is a theme with me. I like it when it's 90 minutes.
Right. Have all of yours been movies so far?
Yes.
Yes, okay. So, for me, this was formative in questioning gender roles, the purpose of gender roles.
Sure.
Having the princess want to be a prince, like that whole aspect of Utena's character. I mean, she even tries the girl's uniform at one point, and then
it's like, I'm
sticking with short. No, that whole thing. And then just this idea that femininity isn't confined within these certain walls, the definition of what it means to be a woman or what you're supposed to do or how you're supposed to feel and how you're supposed to act, that you can be the agitator, you can be the driving force in your own story.
Literally.
it's really, really good. And there's so many secondary and even tertiary characters in this show that you can relate to on various levels. I will always have a big soft spot for Juri and her atheism and her pain.
So I gotta ask, when did you see this show for the first time? Was it in the 90s?
I became aware of it. It was hard to get in the 90s. Like, someone I knew had really, really like fourth generation copied tapes.
Yeah.
So a lot of the information I had on Utena was actually due to reading about it on the internet, downloading clips that I could find. And
the reason I ask is because I wonder, because my first gay crush was Toga.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And it sounds like yours was Judy.
Yeah, probably.
It woke something. I mean, it was already there, but like, that was like, what a dreamboat. Like,
I was an early teen when I probably first saw it through anime music videos. That was sometimes a lot of the ways that I found out about series that I couldn't get a hold of or afford because I worked a $3 an hour babysitting job and didn't have the money for tapes and stuff back then.
Yeah.
So I could watch anime music videos and it would kind of have a core theme and I could see a lot of the animation and then think like, oh, that looked really cool. I want to seek that out. It was kind of like the way that we got trailers, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what Utena was, only it was the movie and it was that music video set to Bachelorette by Bjork.
Right.
Which it's still on YouTube. If you go look it up now, like 8 or 9 years old. And
I've seen it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I saw. And I was like, I need to find this. I need to watch this somehow. I need to look this up and read about it. And that website, I think you've interviewed the owners of it, of otori.new.
Mm-hmm.
It existed at the same time period in my life. And I read the forums on there and all of their essays and shit. And all their character stuff on it because I couldn't watch it.
Yeah.
But let's see, someone I knew, I did end up seeing it for the first time. It was that Software Sculptors release on DVD.
CPM. Yeah. They put that up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So my, like, you know, I love the show and everything, but my favorite is the movie, because it gets it all in, you know, about 90 minutes, and the animation's spectacular. It looks different. It's kind of a different take on the show, but it still gets to basically everything. It's very silly in places, and it ends with, like, the most spectacularly just flex metaphor that you could possibly come up with,
yeah.
Where Utena says goodbye to Toga. She's in love with Anthy, and she, like a giant car wash springs up, and then she gets turned into a car that Anthy literally drives, and they destroy Disneyland and escape into the scary real world, naked, and they kiss.
Yeah.
It's perfect. That's
Does someone kiss at the end of all of your picks?
I think so. Not Mononoke, he may, but...
Not Mononoke. Okay, this is the third one, right?
I suppose this is the third one. Yeah, I guess I just like that.
That's just your favorite ending. That's fine. A good kiss at the end is always nice.
Yeah, only one hetero kiss, though.
Yeah.
The rest of them are gay. The end of that movie is perfect. They literally, seriously destroy Disneyland. That's the intention. That's what they're going for at the end of that. And the way that they build up the characters and everything, I think, is great. And if you're paying attention, you know, yeah, it's a little more obtuse than the... it's a little more obtuse and weird and abstract than the series is because they're trying to cram a lot in there.
But you're saying a lot. The series is still pretty...
The series is pretty abstract, but it also... Like, I feel like the series also kind of wastes a lot of time, especially in the Black Rose arc. Like, it's kind of like, yeah, all right. Okay. All right. I like the Apocalypse arc the best. I think the last third of that show is the best part of it. But the movie just gets it all in there. And it doesn't waste your time. Gets right to it. Great animation. Wonderful film. Also, flawless soundtrack. Like, still one of the best film scores. One of my favorite film scores. Like, I think that's basically perfect. I listen to it all the time still. So, yeah, the Utena movie, man. That's a good one. That's...
They kill Akio off, like, within the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, they do.
They, like, push him out a window or something.
That happens closer to the end of the film, but he just twirls right over the balcony, and that's it for him. It's great shit. I love that movie so much. Anyway, okay, winding down now, what's your number one?
All right. To absolutely no one's surprise.
No, number one is Cyber Team and Akihabara, right?
Zach. I know what that is, and no, it's not. That's another one of those weird squishy face shows from like the early aughts, late 90s.
Okay, so it's like Saber Marionette J.
Okay, right, no. But I...
All right, no, seriously, what's your number one?
Like burn up W. No.
Jesus, that's a deep cut.
Yeah. All right. No, my favorite is the original 1990s magical girl show, Sailor Moon.
Well, okay, specifically which Sailor Moon? Because there's a lot of it. So is it just the whole thing? Like, are you saying that Sailor Moon Super S is your favorite or?
Don't do that to me.
Well, then pick one.
All right. Okay, in fairness, I think that one has one of the best ending themes, but no, my favorite is probably S.
Notably directed by Kunihiko Ikuhara, the guy who made Utena.
I guess, okay, I'll just put them in order. I would say S is one, Stars is second, R is third, Original is fourth, the final one is Supers with fifth.
Sure.
That's my order.
Would probably be my order too. Although I haven't seen, I've actually never watched Stars. We're gonna do a whole series review on that one once the second half comes out. We're gonna do a whole Sailor Moon show, so that'll be good.
Stars is great because Haruka and Michiru just like let it all out in the dialogue in that one.
Right,
like, they're just like openly like flirting in a highly sexual manner. Like,
yo, we're gay. Yeah, we are gay.
Yo, don't talk to me that way outside the bedroom is like a legit line of dialogue from that season.
That's
so
that's good.
It's good. No, so this show is formative to me. Mm-hmm. I first saw it when it aired on USA Today. Not USA Today. That's a newspaper. USA Network.
Yeah.
So it was like part of a morning block. I think they had like Sonic the Hedgehog and Gargoyles and stuff or something like that.
Is on right before the Laugh Olympics. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I was in grade school, I think, when I first saw it. We would later get a PC, a Gateway 2000 PC in the 90s. And that was when I first discovered Sailor Moon fan sites. And that's when I first discovered Sailor Moon fan sites. So prior to that, I didn't know that this was anime. I didn't know that there were more seasons other than what I saw from the Deke dub, which notoriously at the time cut off in the middle of the R season. That confused me a lot because it just like restarted after that for the TV serialization. And I was like, wait, but the story, and that wouldn't get fixed until it got onto Toonami later. So that's when I first discovered what anime was. And it's when I first discovered that there were more characters. I distinctly remember being very overwhelmed accessing like one of these websites on the internet and seeing like the outer guardians and everything like that. It was my first encounter with anything gay in media.
Hmm.
So reading those sites and finding out that characters were gay was not something I had ever been exposed to prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got very, very involved in the America Online Sailor Moon fandom at the time. And I ran a Zine.
It's short for magazine. Zine.
You're just going to have to live with the fact that I'm like this.
I'll give it a shot. Anyway,
All right. So... I ran a zine,
mm-hmm.
a Sailor Moon zine. I had thousands of readers. Okay. Wow. I sent them out weekly. I had like polls and interactive stuff. Like you could earn points. And I made anime music videos. I learned how to edit video to make Sailor Moon music videos. I did this all through like my early teens. And it's probably why I have my job now, if I'm absolutely honest.
Well, happy to have you.
Yeah. So, I mean, I credit my interest in the show and it bringing me into fandom specifically with my professional career, which I enjoy very much. Being on this podcast, our podcast photo, I talked you into, well, I didn't have to talk you into it, but, you know, it's Sailor Moon related.
That was my idea.
Are you sure? I don't know. Anyway.
That was my idea. I was like, well, what would Lindsay like? Okay, well, let's do Sailor Moon. So.
Okay. I'm now 32 years old and I have an entire life built on watching Sailor Moon when I was maybe 9.
All right.
I can't credit anything else. Well, maybe my husband, but maybe.
Sure. All right. can you guess what my number one is?
Is it Plastic Little?
No. No, I'm going to give you one more guess. Just one more. Can you guess what my number one is?
Yu-Gi-Oh?
No. Wrong again.
Oh, man.
It's a show called and movie series called Neon Genesis Evangelion, which literally everyone listening to this is like, I already know what Zach's number one is. And we've talked about it a lot on this show, so I feel like I don't really need to get into it again, but that is my favorite shit. That's my jam. There's a new movie coming out June of next year. I am seriously considering going to Japan to see it.
Yeah,
I cannot fucking wait for that. Ava number one. Like And as much as I kind of don't want to put it there because I talk about it too much, I can't. What am I going to do? Lie? Like, yeah. What am I going to be like? Like, no, I have to be honest. It's obviously fucking Evangelion. So that's my number one. And that's pretty much it. I really don't
rain on your parade for enjoying something too much. I mean,
whatever. People get weird about stuff like that.
Yeah.
Let's see. Do we have any Twitter questions? Let me check real quick. We did have a few of them. Just a second here while I pull it up. I don't want to have to do too much editing. So, okay. All right. Come on. Pull it up. Okay. Let's see. Chuo Doherty asks, do you have any favorite Asian horror films? Do you?
Let's see. I've just seen a handful.
Mm.
And I would say, I don't think I really have a favorite, although I'm always open to recommendations. So if anyone wants to like tweet at me after you listen to the show and be like, Lindsay, you need to watch this specific one, I will do it. Yeah. So I really
like Haosu. It's kind of a cliche. It's kind of a cliche answer, but I like Haosu a lot.
I tried to watch that and I fell asleep, but it might have just been the timing that I watched it.
And probably maybe a little stoned.
Maybe.
You're like, shut up.
Shut up, Zach.
Bebop Shock asks, are there any anime that you would have considered in your top five of all time at some point that you don't now? Yeah, plenty. My top five used to have a really great show called From the New World in it, which is great.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful show. I still love it, but I like Promare a little more. So, you know, these things get shifted around.
I had one that I pushed out, too, that was on there for a while, and that's Now and Then, Here and There.
Oh, yeah. Like, jeez, really, and go in for the depressing shit.
Yeah, sorry. Like, when Lindsay seeks out intense stuff, she just looks at things to, like, beat her in the head, so.
I like screaming and fighting and kissing.
Yeah.
That's what I like. And you like depression and sadness and crime. Well, anyway,
it's a good show though, and it's very good anti-war sentiment.
Yeah, totally. No, that's a great show. I liked it a lot. I still have a copy of that. I've been meaning to revisit that one. It's been a little while.
Yeah.
Vinny Av AGC asks, of the Disney Plus stuff, which they've been announcing all this week, which of the lesser known movies should people check out? Define lesser known as you want. Well, I think that people would get a kick out of a film from the 60s called The Cat from Outer Space. Not the remake, the original. If you are a cat person, this will make you laugh. It's boring and stupid, but you'll get a kick out of it. It's also kind of terrifying because the cat has like a magic alien collar and it can just open windows and doors on its own, which is terrifying as a cat owner because if my cats could do that, they would just get out the house and I don't have outside cats.
I live
like right next to a mountain and there's coyotes everywhere. So like, that's a terrifying thought. But I've never had outside cats. Like, no, they're going to die. You're going to shorten their lifespan. So they stay in. And the movie is silly and the cat actor in it is actually pretty cute and good. So all right. There's that. I would strongly recommend. Now, I don't know if they're making this available right away. Actually, I think they are. Saludos Amigos and The Three Caballeros are both, The Three Caballeros especially, has...
That's the Donald Duck one, right?
Donald Duck is in it, and then there's these three sort of parrot cockatoo characters. And these were centered around... So this was during Walt Disney's friendship with Salvador Dali and his attempt at reaching out to South America. And so Saludos Amigos is just kind of strange. It's also sort of an anthology film. So is Three Caballeros, but Three Caballeros has some of the best psychedelic animation Disney's ever made in it, and it's not particularly available. Like, if you want the Blu-ray of that one, which, of course, I already bought that, but it's only available through the Disney Movie Club, which means that if you buy it secondhand, it's going to be, like, $50. You can't just, like, walk into a store and buy that. I love that movie. The animation in it is spectacular, and it is not like anything you've ever seen before, I promise. Like, it is weird.
Yeah, I know that I've watched it once, but not when I was a child. And I've been meaning to ask you, maybe you remember this. I have a vague memory of a Disney film, an animated Disney film with Donald Duck that I think I rented multiple times as a kid, where he teaches geometry while playing pool.
Oh, you're talking about Donald Duck and Mathemagicland.
Yes. Okay.
That's they used to show that in schools. I think I saw that first in school, but yeah, that's yep, that's classic. I don't know if they're making that one available right away, but anyway, yeah. So there's plenty of lesser known stuff. They're putting a Goofy movie on that service, which you still can't, like, that's also a Disney Movie Club exclusive. Hasn't really been made available in too many different places, but it is one of my all-time favorite Disney animated features. Is a Goofy movie.
I have that one.
Yeah, it's a great movie, and wonderful music, and it's over in like 88 minutes or something, like 75 minutes, something like that. It's really short. And
yeah, Prince is in it.
It's not Prince.
It is Prince, though, isn't it?
Well, no, it's what's his face? Why can't I remember his name? It's a different R&B star from the 90s. He has two songs. He has Eye to Eye and God, what's the other one? I can't believe I'm blanking on this right now. I have seen this movie.
I can't believe that I've been wrong for all of my life.
Thought that was Prince? Tevin Campbell, that's his name. It's Tevin Campbell. You thought that was actually Prince?
You thought that Batman. Why couldn't he be in Goofy movie?
You thought that Prince in the 90s would be in a sort of second tier based on the Goof Troop TV show.
You know what?
There's no fucking way that would have inflated the budget of that movie by like tens of millions of dollars.
I don't have an excuse. I thought it was Prince. It's a good song.
Those are great songs. It's two great songs. That has a really good soundtrack, and it's a musical the whole way through, which I appreciate. I don't like it when there's like, weirdly, I'm not that big a fan of like musicals that are sung through, like Cats. Like, okay. Not a huge fan of that kind of thing. Even though I like Les Mis, like, of course, who doesn't like Les Mis? Mm-hmm. But that sung through musical, it's like, but if you have a musical, I want there to be songs through the whole thing. Like, mm-hmm. Not just like Frozen, which I like that movie. Mm-hmm. It's great. It has one of the best musical numbers in it of all time. Let It Go. You know, everyone loves that.
Yeah.
Well, everyone
used to.
They used to. I still love it. I think it's great.
Yeah.
But the songs kind of stop about. It like right there, the songs basically stop. There's like one more song and there's like an hour of movie left.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, more. Come on, more songs. The Broadway version of that. See, don't bring up Disney because
I was like, how are we on to the Broadway version of Frozen now? How did we get here?
The Broadway version of that has more songs. They added like a bunch of songs to like fill it out. So I'm going to see that pretty soon. Anyway. All right. Moving on.
My recommendation for the Disney Plus thing to watch, assuming I'm not wrong about this too.
Three Caballeros. Just watch that one.
Bed Knobs and Broomsticks.
All right. Well, yeah. Okay. okay. Final Fear Chaos. Do either of you have any experience with giallos or the Italian horror film movement of the late 60s to mid 80s? Admittedly, I'm not really that big a horror guy. I liked the remake of Suspiria more than the original. I thought the remake was actually really good, and the original was kind of like, all right.
I just like making that noise. I don't really have an opinion on that in particular, but...
Do you have any experience with
that? No, but I looked it up after I saw this question because I wanted to know what it is. And just like my previous question, if you have any recommendations from that genre, I'll definitely check it out. It looked like it's pulp mostly.
It's famous for being sort of abstract and violent, and that's kind of what it's,
and sexy.
Yeah. And you know, sex and violence and abstraction, you know.
Yeah,
and art, a very arty direction, that sort of thing. All right, Smith Eric asks, Goosebumps or Are You Afraid of the Dark, the shows from the 90s?
Oh man, this can make or break a friendship.
I mean, I don't have an opinion because I was a teenager in the 90s and had moved on to other things and also didn't have cable. So
I watched the Goosebumps show on VHS. Yeah.
I wasn't a child, so I didn't.
Well, I was a child, okay, at a time. There was a time in my life when I was a child, yeah. And I read Goosebump books, yeah. And I watched...
I mean, I did too in sixth grade, but there right. was no show then. That was right. That was the 80s.
Right, right. I'm a little bit younger. Mm-hmm. So, just a smidge. So, as someone who read, I read a lot of those books. I've since passed on that Goosebump collection onto my kid. I had quite a few. I watched some of the show on VHS, just a couple of select episodes, like the Mask one. And I think there was one with a dungeon or something. But
the one I remember is Say Cheese and Die.
Yeah, you know what? I don't think I ever read that one in particular, but I always remember, yeah, the title.
That's what I remember.
Say Cheese and Die. Yeah, I can picture the cover in my head, too. That's funny. But no, the better show is Are You Afraid of the Dark?
All right. Okay, well, there's your recommendation. Okay, Timmy Dad asks, being that it's spooky season, what is the absolute scariest movie either of you have ever seen? And what's the first movie you can remember scaring you as a child, regardless of whether or not it was meant to be horror?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Well, let's take the first part of that first. So, okay. Scariest movie you've ever seen?
Trying to remember the last time I saw a movie that really scared me. It's been a long time.
Once you get older, stuff doesn't scare you anymore, I think.
Your suspension of disbelief and...
Well, especially if you're a movie person, like you watch a lot of movies and you're there for the art, not necessarily to lose yourself in it. Mm-hmm. You know, which you still can, but I don't know. Nothing scares me, which is kind of a shitty, like, oh, nothing scares you. I don't mean it like in a sort of like, oh, you can't scare me kind of way, but like, you know, scary movies don't really scare me. I appreciate horror and I understand what they're going for, but because I understand the context of where I am and what I'm doing, I remember being scared by the first, this is kind of a weird answer, the first Jurassic Park. Kind of scared me when I was a kid. I had nightmares about velociraptors coming around and stuff, you know.
And they're like hiding in the kitchen.
Hiding in the kitchen. Yeah, that part is kind of like, it, as a kid, I was like, oh, God.
Gotta eat me. I was scared of a lot of movies as a kid. I don't know why I kept watching them. I mean, we talked about me being scared of corn. cornfield by my grandma's house because of Children of the Corn.
Don't bring that up.
Other movies I saw far too young that I was definitely scared of after viewing them was the original It made me afraid of bathrooms in general because there's that scene where he comes out of the drain.
Right.
So I was afraid to close my eyes in the shower. And I would always close the toilet lid before I got into the shower. So he couldn't come out of the toilet while I was in the shower with my eyes closed. And another one was Candyman. I was afraid of Candyman because it has that whole Bloody Mary sort of aspect to it. So, you know, mirrors. I was afraid of mirrors for a little while.
Mm-hmm. Ghoulies too, obviously.
Yeah, dude. Just coming out of the toilet, eating my butt, just right there. Well,
some people pay a lot of money for that. Anyway. moving on. Let's see here. Are any anime horror movies good enough to be in your swap?
You're going to say the same thing.
I can pretty much only think of Perfect Blue or Lily Cat making the cut. Well, the horror movie swap is, like, if we're going to do anime, we'll dedicate the main segment to that. So we're not going to, like, I wouldn't put that in the opening segment. We try to keep that a little limited, even though sometimes it goes on for a little while. Perfect Blue is a wonderful film and still really effective. I was kind of shocked. Like, so the used record store that I go to is Amoeba Music. It's famous. It's in downtown Hollywood. And I love that place, but when I came, they usually have TVs that are just playing something that run, and they were showing Perfect Blue the last time.
Really?
And I was like, you know, there's a really graphic rape scene in this. Like, maybe don't just have anyone wandering. Like, not a good choice. Great movie. Not a good choice for, like, just a store showing stuff.
Right. Can you imagine that playing in the background of a Blockbuster when they used to do that?
Yeah, but that is a great pick for, like, wonderful horror film that happens to be anime. It's like, I can't think of a better one, really. You know, a lot of people would point to like Vampire Hunter D or whatever, but to me that's more fantasy than it is horror. Like, just because it has vampires in it doesn't mean it's scary. It's just fantasy. Like, it's a fantasy movie. I don't really like, and people will always list it on like, here's the 10 greatest horror anime. And it's like, that's not a scary movie.
It's not a scary movie. If I too want to get into a castle rocket ship with my vampire boyfriend and go into the sky.
Yeah, exactly. all right. Porco Broso asks, what do you think Disney's role will be in the future, if at all, with anime streaming? They don't seem interested right now. Pray that they continue to be disinterested, because once they decide to swallow it, they will. And then things are going to get worse. So don't.
Can I just imagine like a giant version of Bill Iger's head, like just swallowing Japan?
Yeah, don't give him any ideas. Netflix already tried that. And so far, they're sort of marginally succeeding. Okay, let's see. Sushi asks, last question. What factors need to come together to make a show one of your favorites? Are there aspects of a production that don't matter as much in this sense? Well, so for me, I'm a theme character and screenwriting guy. I care the most about theme and story and the way it all comes together. That's what I care about the most. You could have something that is basically a slideshow, and so long as the writing is there, I'm going to praise it. You know, like I said, I almost put Thunderbolt Fantasy on my list, even though that's a puppet show, because I love the writing in that so much. Like, I think that the writing is just incredibly strong. So that is the most important thing to me. And it's, frankly, it's not like it's the only thing that matters. It's just that, like, technical artistry is great, and I appreciate it and everything. But what I care about is feeling. What I care about is emotion. That's what I care about. So that's what's required. And so all of my picks are pretty emotionally intense the entire way through. So you can guess like what my sort of ethos is when it comes to this kind of thing. What about you?
Yeah, I guess I seek out media that I feel I can see myself reflected in on an emotional level. So for me, if I feel like I've watched something and it's told me that it understands me and I understand it, like mutually, it sticks with me a lot longer than maybe just something I watched because it was fun or something, you know, I watched for the spectacle of it.
Yeah, I get bored with stuff that just feels like, you know, content, trademark symbol. I get bored with it because it's like, okay, is this just a pastime? Like P-A-S-S-T-I-M-E, pastime, like, just killing time here, waiting for death. Here's 10 hours of this. Like, I don't know. I think that's a big part of the reason a lot of my stuff is movies, is because it doesn't feel like it's wasting my time. And it's not, there's no filler, you know, no filler, all killer. Like, that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah. So, yeah, I like to seek out things like, I mean, we all dabble in something that's just escapism. Mine is the British baking show, because I can just put that on at like 9 p.m. and lay on the couch and be like, everyone in the show is going to be nice to each other, and I'm going to look at a lot of bread that I want to eat, and then, you know, that's it after an hour.
Right, and then you wind up eating too late and carbs.
I've wanted to eat just perfectly oven-warmed sourdough bread while watching that show so many times. Like, it taps into that specific craving for me.
Yeah, no, I mean, the stuff is fine. It's just, it's not going to be something where I'm like, hey, you got to watch this. It's like, this is content. Like,
right, and if you asked me who any of the winners were from the previous season, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, yeah.
They got the guy from the Mighty Boosh, so that's what I remember about that. Yeah. I don't know, my drug of choice when it comes to just that kind of thing is like HBO stuff. So like recently, Succession was really, really good, and so was the Righteous Gemstones. That was really good as well. Content. Like, you know, I wouldn't like push it or say like, hey, this is excellent and you definitely need to see it. It's like, you know, if you're looking for a TV show, you know, but I like things that aren't 10 hours long. Like, I just prefer that, because otherwise it takes up so much time, and like, I have so much shit to watch and so much work to do that it's like, I like it when it's only 2 hours.
It's almost like you need to make a choice about which characters do I want to personally invest my time in.
Yeah, because it's such a content glut that, like, there's so much stuff that choice seems like it's sort of increasingly important because I have other shit to do, like video games to play, podcasts to listen to, books to read, which is more important. And, like, you know, I don't just sort of, I try not to just casually consume. And because, you know, we also make this show. So, like, every week we got to talk about the stuff we've been watching. And so I want to pick something that's got something to say about, like, where there's something to talk about. And that's generally kind of how I make my content choices. So I don't just sort of scroll through Netflix sludge and just watch whatever. Like, I try not to do that. If it's like a Friday night and I'm, you know, getting stoned, I will probably put on an old movie. I will probably go through my gigantic physical media library and be like, you know what I haven't seen in a while? Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Let's watch that one again. Like, you know, like that's...
Or Ghoulies 2. You
know, or perhaps the film, the classic horror, beloved by all, Ghoulies 2. yeah, something like that. That's kind of my philosophy on that stuff. Anyway, I think that wraps us up. Thanks for stopping on by, buddy.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Lindsay for coming by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, check us out on iTunes, Stitcher. Leave us ratings and reviews. We really appreciate it. Really appreciate you all listening every week. And I hope you have a great day. We'll see you all next week.